Millennial
Lessons. How's it going, guys? Welcome to the first episode of Free Millennial Lessons, the podcast that shares impact and personal growth stories for the millennial generation. My name is John Prawira.
And I'm Richard Darsono. And in this episode, we're with a special guest, Heston Prasetyo. So Heston is an old friend of mine. He has been traveling around the world, producing music. And recently, 2 years ago, he went back to Jakarta, his hometown, to start a career in the creative industry. And today we're gonna listen to his stories and what impact means for the music industry.
So let's get to it.
So how's it going, Heston?
Good, good. How are you guys doing?
I guess we could start by you telling us a little bit about yourself, dude.
Yeah, so my name is Heston, I'm a Gemini, yeah. nice start, but I'm a musician, I produce music for bands, and mainly these days I work a lot for moving pictures, movies and advertising, stuff like that, yeah.
That's interesting, man. Like, I know that we went to like schools together in the past, like junior high, mm-hmm. high school. Do you want to tell the story about how you first began your music journey, maybe like from your decision to go to music school, because I know you went to one.
Yeah. So since I was little, I've always wanted to, you know, become a musician, obviously. And then, so I tell that to my mom, right? Okay, mom, I want to become a musician. When I was in junior high, I was like playing in bands and stuff. That's the guitar. My mom was like, no. They're all engineers, and all my brothers are engineers. And then when I was in high school, okay, probably, yeah, it's not really a career thing. So I put it all behind and I studied architecture.
Right.
And then I showed some of my drawings to my mom. And then she said, okay, you should become a musician. So, back again.
Why did you decide on becoming an architect, at least for that little while?
Because I was watching a lot of How I Met Your Mother. No, and at the same time, it's like a very good mixture between, you know, art and engineering. I mean, it's just, yeah, I'm fascinated with buildings, bridges, right. Stuff like that.
So you mentioned that you switch from wanting to become an architect into like a musician.
Yeah.
Tapi itu lu berubah pikiran gara-gara nyokap lu aja atau kayak you're thinking about like your passion, you know, like deep inside.
Yeah, for me even kayak thinking about doing architecture itu, it was kayak still driven by my passion, mm-hmm. but not supported by my talent. So on the other hand, I've always, you know, been active in music groups and bands and ensembles, writing and, you know, performing. Jadi it was sort of the way to go. I can't really imagine myself doing anything else. That was pretty much it.
So you graduated high school and you went to the Berklee College of Music.
Yes.
Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, so Berklee College of Music is in Boston, East Coast. And
that's where John Mayer went to, right?
Yeah. John Mayer. Well, he dropped out. The cliche is, the famous ones out of that school are the dropouts, actually.
Yep.
So, the ones who graduate, who actually graduate, like me, aren't as famous usually. But yeah, that's the cliche. But at the same time, yeah, it's a music school in Boston, and I studied music production and engineering, mm-hmm. with a minor of music technology.
How was the transition into music school? And how did you handle the pressure? Because I know that, you know, Berklee College of Music, mm-hmm. the best of the best go there, right?
Yeah, I mean, in terms of contemporary music, yeah, it's definitely one of the best. The pressure was really high, so mm-hmm. going there, I'm a big fan of John Mayer, and then I thought I wanted to become the next John Mayer, you know.
I see.
I wanted. But when I was there, like, guess what? Everybody wanted to become the next John Mayer, right. And they're so much skillful and taller, mm-hmm. and more handsome. So, and I was thinking, like, there's already a John Mayer out there. Like, yeah, so that's why I went into the production and the other field. But yeah, going there, it's I'm very blessed and fortunate to, you know.
Is there any, like, preconception or... And what's, like, the realization after you went through the music school? And maybe this is a segue into, like, the industry.
Okay.
Like, what are the expectations? Your expectations going into music school and your, yeah, learnings after going into the industry.
Right. I mean, obviously, I think it, same with any kind of industry. You know, the real world is very different from what we were doing. Obviously, the pressure having, you know, seniors and other people working with you who are actually more experienced and you're actually learning from them is very different from being the in a learning environment in class. But at the same time, I was very blessed with, you know, meeting so many good professors, so many experienced professors to prepare me for the real world. And I did take some part times and stuff like that, so it wasn't necessarily a hard transition when it comes to technicalities and skills. It's more of a mental transition, which is harder for me because, especially in Indonesia, the work culture is rather different compared to US. And socially and, you know, stuff like that. But yeah, it is a bit tough at first. You have to adjust, and you know, the seniority, I think, is very different.
Yeah, interesting.
Let's backtrack and talk a little bit about competition. I want to get an idea of what competition looks like in the production space. Because I went to business school for undergrad.
Right.
And competition there looked like, you know, training your case interview skills, working on your resume, and then eventually landing the banking or consulting job. You know, that's what I felt competition looked like in my university days. I wonder what it looks like for you.
For me, I definitely felt the competition. The most I felt was back in the US when we were looking for jobs and stuff like that. Because for example, I was I'm a sound engineer,
right?
So every studio has sound engineers, but they only have, like, you know, a few in the you know, that is for the position. They only have a few. So at the same time, when we were doing, for example, like a school trip to, you know, Nashville, and we were visiting studios, everyone was like in front of everybody's faces, just like talking to people, trying to connect, trying to land an internship, trying to land a job, or stuff like that. And the pressure was on, so competition was really hard. But at the same time, this is what I think is unique about the art industry. It's less competition and more, you know, collaborating with others. In that aspect, you know, I could totally collaborate with other producers when it comes to different projects, collaborate with other writers or, you know, composers. And in that sense, it is different. But in a job sense, in a job search sense, it is more or less the same.
I sort of want to double click on the idea of the difference between the industry in the US and in Indonesia. Maybe, like, if you could, like, tie it back to the competition. Talking more about that.
I think the specifically the music industry, we're talking the streamline and the division of labor and the, you know, like the workflow pretty much is much clearer compared to Indonesia. And
this is in the US, right?
Yeah, in the US compared to Indonesia. They have specific people doing specific tasks, and I think it reduces a lot of, you know, time when it comes to working on your projects. It's very professional. I mean, I'm not saying that Indonesia is not, but I'm just saying it is on a different level compared to Indonesia. But at the same time, I think music in Asia in general, I think we're heading that way, and then we're developing very, very fast. And with the internet these days, I think we're getting there. Although it is still a different process in US.
Right. So we're catching up.
Yeah, we're catching up.
So we can't really replicate the trends in the US and India because it's a whole different field. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we can definitely, but the division of labor that I was talking about, you know, like for example, in the US, they have a sound engineer, they have a producer, they have a songwriter specifically for each tasks. And it is, the lines are far clearer compared to Indonesia. Meanwhile, in here, for example, when I'm working on like music for film, I would sometimes play guitar and finish the final product, you know, instead of just playing guitar or playing piano just to compose the music and then have another guy to finish
Yeah,
it's the division of labor that is different, and sometimes it matters to the lack of focus, for example, and concentration.
I see. So it's more end-to-end.
Yeah, yeah, it's more end-to-end. Definitely.
Is that more rewarding in that sense?
Yeah, yes and no. It's like, you know, you have more... you have more concentration towards your music, and at the same time, the music itself is sort of your product, but in the US, it's, you're a part of something bigger.
Yep.
You know, it's a very collaborative thing, and the lack of focus is different. It's very different because in the US, you can just focus on songwriting, for example. You can just record yourself with a guitar and a voice note on iPhone, and you'll have a song.
Yeah, right.
You don't have to record it and then mix it with the right amplifiers and stuff like that, and you'll have other guys to worry about that.
Okay.
Meanwhile, in Indonesia, it's more of a, you know, an A to Z sort of thing.
Right.
That's how I feel.
Interesting. I don't know if this is the correct analogy, but to me, it sounds like working for a smaller startup versus working for a big corporation.
Yeah,
In smaller startups, like you do A to Z from like planning, the coding,
execution.
Whereas
it
like
is.
In bigger corporations, you have this like really specific functions.
Yes.
And then you hand it over to a different team.
Exactly.
Yeah.
There's a clear like division.
Yeah, there is clear divisions. I'm not saying, but I'm not saying Indonesia don't have that.
Yeah.
I'm just saying it's not as clear of a line compared
right.
to the US.
So to move on to a new point, like, would you mind sharing your definition of impact, like in your work? Like, how do you define impact?
How I define impact in my work, probably, you know, when people just frankly straight to your face that I really dig your music or I enjoy your music, or especially when they're referring you know, their actual experiences to your music, for example, oh, this song is about me, you know, something like that. And for me, that is a very like a personal impact, you know.
Yep.
And I think it's the definition of impact for me about music.
But money's still important, right?
Oh, yeah. It's impactful to my wallet.
That's a good way to put it.
But I think, you know, let's just say money, I think, comes naturally if you're doing impactful things.
Right.
The money will come.
The money will come.
Got it.
But yeah.
Do you think is there like a way to make the impact more scalable to industry-wide environment? For example, you're saying about like the personal satisfaction
after work.
But what if like maybe like to your point about the work culture of the US, maybe like if let's say if we could like learn one or two things from their work ethic and then apply it to the local industry here, then it would like create like sort of a bigger waves among the
And a bigger impact towards the society, for example, bringing up values and stuff like that. Yeah, totally. If you bring, you know, if you put social aspects in your music, it is definitely gonna be more impactful. Like for example, when Michael Jackson was singing, you know, like Heal the World, he invited singers from Africa and stuff like that, you know. It is gonna be way more impactful. And then you bring up, you know,
what's up?
And yeah.
No reason we're laughing, guys. It's just Richard's making funny faces all of a sudden.
Yeah, I mean, when you bring social aspects into your art in general, not just music, it is definitely more impactful. We can totally see that, you know, in hip hop these days, you know, they brought up, well, I don't want to say it, but they brought stuff like, you know, Black Lives Matter and stuff like that. And I think that's very cool. And we should have more of that in Indonesia as well.
Cool. Could you tell us a little bit about one of your favorite projects that you did?
One of my favorite projects?
Or just your favorite projects. And maybe along with that, your not so favorite projects.
Oh, my not so favorite projects. Let's start with the favorite one. recently I worked with Steve Smith Production, and we were working on two singles, two tracks for an indie band. The name of the band is Goodnight Electric, and it's a band from like 2010s or so, I used to listen to them back in like junior high and high school, and I used to go to, you know, not even concert, like Pansy.
Yeah.
You know,
Pantaseni.
Yeah, Pantaseni. I would go to Pantaseni, and then I watched them. And that was like junior high and high school. And then 2 months ago, 3 months ago, we started the project to finish two songs. And then I worked with them, and then it was just very, as you said, it was very impactful to me as a producer. And you know, being able to work with them is such a grateful opportunity, I think.
How about your least?
Oh, my least.
Forgot about that, man. Oh,
seems like you have a lot, man.
Yeah. The thing is, usually, I mean, I cannot say names. I won't say names, but I worked on a couple of like short jingles for let's just say for
brands.
The finance industry. Okay. or banking industry. Yeah, banking industry. Right. And then I worked on a short jingle, and it was just, you know, they were singing. The thing is that we had to work on the lyrics and stuff like that, but the lyrics, they're singing about their product, so it's like the equivalent of a rapper singing about how much money they got, handsome they are, except for banking. So that was really weird. That was very weird, because they're talking about how good their product is, how simple and easy to use, in a lyric. So it was very weird for me.
But you gotta keep it professional. So.
I kept it professional. Yeah. I mean, the song itself sounded good. If I don't speak Indonesian, you know what I mean?
Right.
Because if you add the lyrics into the song, it sounded weird. Yeah.
I kind of want to double click on your experience in producing music for movies.
Oh, for movies,
that's a
total
different ballgame, right?
Yeah, it is a very different ballgame. When it comes to movies, music aren't necessarily the kind of traditional music that we're thinking of, you know. Sometimes music could be a little bit of a texture to support the picture, because sometimes when you watch a movie, you don't even realize that there's music in it. And you just sort of focused on the picture, but that doesn't mean, you know, there's like the music that they made is bad, you know what I mean, because the music is there to support the picture. And sometimes that's why it's very different from making an actual track, where you have to have, you know, guess something really interesting going on.
Yeah.
Like,
sure,
what is this sound?
Sure.
What is that sound? Oh, this drum sounds like a weird garbage can, you know, and random stuff like that. Meanwhile, for pictures, usually you're trying to surf on something bigger. You have a bigger sense of art in front of you, and it is very different.
But the main philosophy is still the same, right?
The main philosophy, I mean, it is still music, but at the same time, talking about theory a little bit, it doesn't necessarily have a strong tonal features in it, you know, not as strong as contemporary pop music, for example. Like, you don't have to resolve and, you know, have a closure on your music. Sometimes it would be just like hanging there, like, you know, like if you're watching, you know, like a scary movie or, you know, like a thriller, sometimes the sound is just, you know, like hanging and just supposed to make you feel, you know, uncertain, stuff like that. Meanwhile, in pop music, you gotta finish what you started, sort of mentality.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Oh, you're singing the verse, you gotta go to the chorus.
Right.
You know, like there's that sense of direction that is far more clear.
There's like a formula to it.
There's a formula to it. Yeah. And in movies, yeah, there's a formula to it too, but it's a very different formula. But philosophically, it is still music.
Okay.
But yeah.
Off mic, we were talking about how we really enjoyed the movie Shape of Water. Specifically, you talked about the music, right?
Yeah.
Talk about that again.
Yeah. So he's the composer is one of my favorite composer. He's French, I think. His name is Alexandre Desplat, and he also composed music for Harry Potter, and then Wes Anderson movies, stuff like that. And when you're watching The Shape of Water, it just feels like the whole movie you're underwater. So if you don't know The Shape of Water, it's a movie about a girl falling in love with a fish. with a fish man. Okay. But yeah, it is a very absurd concept, but they took you out of that concept into a very humane experience about falling in love. And that's what's great about it. And the music is just, the whole thing, the whole time you felt like you were underwater. And then they always have traditional orchestral instruments, you know, like violins and stuff like that. But they would have like a highlight on, or like a contrasting instrument, like accordion, like in an orchestral environment, which is kind of weird, to be honest. But that's the thing with that particular composer. He always has something interesting on top of something that is traditional.
Right. And do you have any role models or mentors that you follow?
Yeah, definitely. So I mentioned I used to work at Steve Smith. And the owners, actually, there are two. So they're brothers. His name is Nara and Randy. So Randy used to be the keyboard player for he's the keyboard player for the band Niji. And Niji. Niji is definitely one of those bands that I listened to back in junior high.
Asghar Pelangi was my shit.
Yeah, man. Dude, like even back in the day, I used to cover the, one of their songs, like on Pansy, you know, to tie it all off. Right.
Full circle, dude.
Yeah, full circle. And yeah, when I met him, I was like, shit, I'm actually a big fan of this guy. And then I'm working on music with him, and he's sort of like a mentor to me. And he always knows what's going on, what's the newest and hottest stuff.
Right.
And he knows whether to, you know, make something cheesy or not, because having something cheesy in your music is not necessarily bad, I think. It's, you know, in order to make a good pasta, you gotta put a little bit of cheese. It's that kind of mentality, but at the same time, too much is, you know, never good, but
too salty.
Yeah, exactly. Especially when you're talking about fettuccine.
Different podcasts on pasta.
He always knows how much cheese you should put in your music.
It's more an art than a science.
Yeah. Tadi we briefly spoke about your not so exciting projects.
Oh yeah.
I kind of want to get an understanding of your failures.
My failures, yeah.
Projects that you failed on,
I've had
school as well.
Huh? Back in school?
Yeah,
I've had lots of failures, honestly. I've released songs that I don't want to listen to right now, you know?
Yeah.
Like, when I was doing it, of course, I was thinking like, oh shit, this is such a banger. But after, you know, a couple of months or so, it's just like, what was I doing? But I've had projects like that. And for me, those kind of projects are the kind of projects that I need in order to grow. So it's a very general concept, I think. Till this day, I still have lots of stuff that I don't really dig. Especially when it comes to advertising and commercials. Not saying that I don't like it, but some of the concepts are less musical and more into the business and, you know, commercial side.
Right.
Like they want to say this and they want to say that, but those things aren't very musical things to say, things to sing, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And they have, you know, they usually have a lot of message and very little time to put it on television, you know. You only have like 30 seconds to put, you know, like 5 or 7 different points about your product. Damn, like, you know, you really need like Eminem to sing those shit. Because yeah, it could be pretty hard and even harder to make it musical, you know what I mean?
Right.
You're not saying those words, you're singing it. Because that sometimes that's the tough part for me as a producer when it comes to doing commercials. But it is fun. It is the fun part as well, but it is tough, you know.
It's sort of like compromising your ideas.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. But at the end of the day, life is about compromising.
So let's switch gear a little bit. I know that you do a bit of performance as a musician.
Yeah.
Like you DJ, you're a resident DJ at Yellowfin.
Yes.
And recently what you won in Senopati.
The Senopati area in general.
And you also just formed your band, Fintonic, is that right?
Yes, Fintonic.
Do you mind talking about that?
The performance side of music, maybe being the artist side instead of being the producer side. So being a producer and being a performer in general, I think it's very different. Being a producer feels a little bit more like, you know, being an office worker or you go to a studio by yourself or, you know, and then you work on something. It's very different with the idea of being an artist where you're supposed to entertain people and entertain, you know, crowds, specifically an audience or something. And for me, yeah, when I'm DJing or when I'm performing in a band, it's also very different, because when you're DJing, usually people are having drinks, people are chilling, people are not paying attention as much as you thought. Like when I'm DJing, usually people wanna, you know, have me on their stories on Instagram, and they would ask, "Oh, can you pretend like you're doing something with your hands?" You know, because when you're DJing, usually you're kind of idle, waiting for the next song. And then I would say, you know, like, "Oh, that's what I'm doing the whole night," because I just play the play button. No, just kidding. I make songs. But yeah, it's a very different aspect. You're trying to entertain people. You're trying to you want them to have a good time instead of, you know, you're trying to create something. You're performing. It's a very different aspect.
Okay, the final question: if you could steal, you know, Marty McFly's time machine from Back to the Future, go back in time and meet high school Heston, what advice would you give to him?
What advice? Back in high school, maybe listen to something else other than blues. Because yeah, back in high school I was only listening to blues like 24/7. But yeah, I would say to young Heston, dude, get yourself out there. There are so much good music on the radio, on everything, and just start to listen to like anything else.
Right. On top of that, do you have any specific resources recommendation for those young producers who are like young
high
school students? Yeah, who are like
tips? Or something like that.
Maybe thinking of going to music school as well.
Right. If you want to go to a music school, don't expect, you know, it's a music school. It's not a rock star school. You know what I mean? You don't go there to become a rock star. You go there to study music. I think that's a very common misconception when it comes to, you know, studying music, because you know, okay, my favorite rock stars, they didn't study music. They probably made a deal with Satan and become famous. I don't know. But one thing for sure, they didn't study music for college, and I'm not saying I'm smarter than them in terms of music theories, but you know, you don't. It's not a rock star school, yeah. You go there to study music if you're passionate about studying music, you know what I mean. But if you wanna, you know, you're not. Yeah, if you wanna become a rock star, yeah, start a band and you know do those things. Go out there and then play. But going to a music school means that you go in there and you study music, you know.
Right. That's a good way to put it.
Yeah, yeah.
Alright, thank you, Heston. I think that was our final question.
Yep.
Thank you so much for your time, man. Thanks for sharing your story.
Cool.
Hey. Cheers, bro.
Cheers. And yeah, guys, just want to say, please keep listening to FML. These guys are super cool. They're gonna have other really cool guests. And it's, yeah, free millennial lessons, guys.
But like, I mean, like apart from that, tell us a bit about your production company. Shout out your production company.
Yeah,
forget about it.
Yeah.
Dexter Sound
Lab.
How do we find you? How do the listeners find you?
Yeah, check. We have a website. Oh wait,
I forgot.
We have a website, dextersound.com, and just hit us on Instagram as well at dexter.sound. So it's a company I started with a friend of mine from Berklee College of Music, and then we started this company. We mainly work on jingles and produce songs and music for movies and stuff like that.
Cool.
Thanks for listening, guys. Till next time.
Okay.
All right, and this is a special part in our podcast where we ask our guests a series of rapid questions.
Okay.
Start now. DJ or Rockstar?
Rockstar.
Last song you want to listen to before you die?
No!
Stairway to Heaven?
Beatles!
Yeah.
Stairway to Heaven?
No, Highway to Hell.
Alright. Favorite go-to drink?
Whiskey sour.
Best drunk food after a night out?
Bubur Kwanto!
Yay! Three top qualities you appreciate in a woman.
Three top qualities? Qualities of what? Oh, yeah. being honest, you know, responsible, and most importantly, fun.